aside from his passion for Jesus Christ and his love for his family, I think his greater passion is providing a sound theological education for people all over the world. And that's why he founded Third Mill and is the president of Third Mill right now. He has a passion to see good seminary quality training given to leaders all over the world. And one of the statements I found on your website, Richard, was that where the church is growing the fastest, often Christian leaders have the least amount of training. And I thought that's a very interesting point and one of the reasons Third Mill exists. If you don't know much about Third Mill, their desire, their focus is to develop cost-effective methods of producing high-quality multimedia video lessons using seminary-trained professors, theologically trained educators, and they translate it into, I think, are there four languages or five? Four or five?
It's five.
It's five.
And then other groups, about 16 more.
Wow, that's amazing. You know, I think this conference, I heard three different missionaries talk about how they are planning to use Third Mill material or they're already using it. I think that's just impressive and one of the reasons why Carriage Lane has been so enthusiastic about supporting this ministry. Dr. Pratt got his MDiv at Union Theological Seminary, his Doctor of Theology from Harvard. He was a seminary professor for 21 years at RTS Orlando and head of the Old Testament department. He's the author of at least four popular books that I know of and numerous journal articles. He's written two commentaries, one on 1st and 2nd Corinthians and one on 1st and 2nd Chronicles. And he was the general editor of the NIV Spirit of the Reformation Study Bible. And he's traveled extensively, as you can imagine, evangelizing, lecturing in places like China, Indonesia, Russia, Eastern Europe, South America. So, Richard, thank you for coming this weekend. We look forward to hearing what the Lord has placed on your heart. Welcome.
Thank you. Hey, everybody. Hey, everybody. Thanks for coming out on a Saturday morning. Are you just avoiding something your wife wants you to do? Yeah, that's right. I know. I know why you're out here for breakfast on Saturday morning. Can you hear me okay? Yeah, but don't worry. She's waiting for you to get back. Boy, too many of you are nodding like it's really true. I understand. I have a wife, too, and a long list of things. We're going to talk a little more about what Third Millennium Ministries during the Sunday school hours. Is that right, Doug? Where are you, Doug? Did he leave? He's already gone to do his list. It must really be long. I think we're going to do that, so I won't bore you with talking much. Hey, Doug, is that right? Just say yes, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, good. So so you're giving everybody money this morning then, right? That's what you just agreed to. But I'm glad to be with you, and thank you very much. And my role this morning is to just bring to you a short little message and then to get you to talk together with me, okay? That's what I've been asked to do. And we're supposed to be out of here by 9:30, right? 9:30. So we'll make it short and sweet and to the point. Let me read a Bible passage to you that a lot of you have heard before, but I want to read it just because it's just so wonderful and so relevant to what we're facing today. This is in Romans chapter 1, beginning in verse 14. The Apostle Paul writes these words, "I am under obligation both to Greeks and to barbarians, both to the wise and the foolish. So I am eager to preach the gospel to you also who are in Rome. For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the righteous shall live by faith." Let's pray together. Lord Jesus, these are words that your apostle wrote thousands of years ago for people who lived in a very different part of the world and a very different time than what we live in today. But we look to you as our teacher. We look to you as the one in whom we trust. the one who will lead us. And so we're asking you now to send Holy Spirit to us, and may he help us understand and see the relevance of what your apostle wrote thousands of years ago for our lives right here in this place and this time. And as you do that, we will give you praise and give you thanks for it. Amen. I want you to imagine an 8-year-old boy standing behind the curtain of his elementary school, and he was scared to death. I know he was because I was the 8-year-old boy. And it was going to be the first solo I ever sang in front of my elementary school. Tears are coming down my cheeks. My hands are shaking like this. The curtain was still closed. And my teacher, Mrs. Camper, I remember this so well. She was standing over on the edge behind the curtain. And when she saw those tears coming down, my hands shaking like this, she said, "Hold the curtain, hold the curtain." That's what I remember the most. "Hold the curtain, hold the curtain." And yeah, we're out of here. But she ran over to me and she grabbed me by the shoulders like this. And she started shaking me like this. And she said, "Richie, if you don't get some confidence, you're going to mess up this whole program." That was why I was crying. I knew I was going to mess it up. I think we all understand what she meant. I don't know whether she did the right thing. I didn't become a singer. But we understand what she meant. And that is that there are certain things you just can't get done unless you have a certain measure of confidence. You ought to be involved in it. It ought to be done. It can be done. There's a long list of things that you need to have some confidence in if you're going to do something in your life, right? You can nod. It's a Saturday morning, not Sunday morning. Good. We can even whisper an amen on Saturday morning. Yeah. And I think that's an important thing for us to keep in mind today, living in L.A., Lower Atlanta. Because if there's anything that I've noticed about evangelical Christians in our country, it is that we're losing confidence in the good news of Jesus, and we're pulling back, and we're making things worse than we could possibly imagine just because we're lacking confidence. How's that sound? Okay. This passage is remarkable because we just read in verse 14 that the apostle said, "I'm eager to come to Rome to preach the gospel to you." He didn't say, "I'm willing to if I have to," or "I'm going to because God's making me," or anything like that. He says, "I'm eager to come to Rome to preach the gospel to you." Now, I can guarantee you, if you surprised your wife today with 2 tickets to Rome, she'd be excited. You ought to try it, okay? But the fact is that Rome was not like that in Paul's day. Today, if you go to Rome, take your wife to Rome, what you'll do is you'll do a little tour of Vatican City and maybe the Colosseum, some ruins, things like that, throw some coins in a fountain. Do you remember that movie? Good. Usually people don't know what I'm talking about when I say that. Yeah, throw the coins in the fountain, then you get on a plane and come home. It's a great trip, okay? But that's not the way it was in Paul's day. In Paul's day, for him to go to Rome and to talk about Jesus meant that he'd be risking his life and endangering the lives of many others. Very different. It would be a little bit more like you and me sticking tickets in the top dresser drawer and, you know, say, "Sweetheart, I got a great surprise for you. Go open the top drawer." And she opens it up and looks at these 2 airplane tickets that you bought, and they are to Mecca. Okay, that's what it would be like. Going into a place where if you're going to talk about Jesus, you're facing real danger in your life and facing danger for other people that are associated with the Christian faith. That would be what it would be like. And what do you think your wife would think if she saw tickets to Mecca? Are you crazy? I love Jesus too, but are you just stupid? Why would we ever want to do this? I bet you your youth short-term mission trips have never been to Mecca. Would that be fair to say? Doug, where are you? Did he leave again? Oh, there you are. Have you ever sent your youth group to Mecca? No. Plenty of need, right? Plenty of opportunity. I mean, you just start walking around that circle with them as they walk around the stone. You with me on this? You stand out, handing out tracts. I could see that happening right now. It's the kind of thing I would have done when I was 17. Not now, though, because now I'm going to play it safe. Now I'm going to be reasonable. Now I'm going to hold back now I'm going to be all these kinds of things because, well, I lack confidence. But Paul says, I'm eager to go to Rome to preach the gospel. And the question, of course, for us is, why? And he says in verse 16, this is the verse that a lot of you have memorized probably, for I am not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. He says, the reason I'm ready to go to Rome is because I'm not ashamed of this thing that we call the good news of Jesus. I'm not a bit ashamed of it. Another way to put it is, I don't lack any confidence in it at all. And you know, those are weird, sort of weird words for an apostle to say. I am not ashamed of the gospel, because who would have ever thought he was? I mean, this is the man that went everywhere talking about Jesus, before kings, before the poor, before demoniacs. You know, anywhere, any opportunity he had, he was telling them about Jesus. He would go to churches that hated him, and he'd return to the church again, over and over and over. But he was left to die, he was beat up, he was shipwrecked, you know, you name it. Who would have ever thought he was ashamed of the gospel? So why then did he say, I am not ashamed of the gospel? Why did he waste the ink saying that? I think we can guess why, because he knew something about himself and about every single Christian person. This is not unusual. It's sort of par for the course. And what is it? It's natural. It's normal. It's the kind of thing you should expect of yourself, that you should will feel a little bit embarrassed, a little bit ashamed, a little bit hesitant, a little lacking in confidence about this thing that we call the good news of Jesus. Now, you might say to yourself, not me. And that may be true of you, but you'd be unusual if that were true. Now, I don't know about you, but I've been a professional Christian for almost, well, 40 years now, I guess. That means I've made my living from my faith for 40 years. I'm making it, Tim. Remember what I warned you about that? When you make your living from your faith, you always lose one or the other. Yeah. Well, I'm making it, okay? But I have to admit to you that when that even I, sort of the person who's like professional at this and very committed to this, even I look for excuses not to let people know what I believe. I don't know what it's like here in L.A., but in Orlando, there are, as far as I know, no manly barbershops. Do you have any manly barbershops around here in Peachtree City? Way to go. I cannot find one in my part of Orlando, which means you have to go to these unisex places, okay, which is terrible because they talk to you when they cut your hair, right? In the men's barbershop, they know what to do. They leave you alone. If you don't want to talk, you just go and say, give me the regular. That's it. Getting the money, you're out, right? And if you want to talk, you can, but it's about reasonable things like NASCAR and stuff like that, football. But in these places, they talk to you, and they want to talk to you about you because they're trained to do that, right? So they look at a ticket. Well, Richard, what do you do? It's always going to come up. You know it is. My usual response is something like, well, I'm a teacher. You're what? I'm a teacher. Well, what do you teach? I teach religion. You teach religion. Where do you do that? In seminary. Seminary? Are you a rabbi? That's the typical first response. Are you a rabbi? No. Are you a priest? No. They don't know what a Protestant is in my part of Orlando, okay? So, you know, that's okay up to that point. But what happens is they keep talking about it. And often, this doesn't happen every single time, but it's happened often enough, I can tell you, it's not unusual for the whole store to stop to hear these whacked out things I believe. I mean, totally ridiculous things. Like, Jesus is the only way of salvation. What? Or that the Bible is the Word of God and I actually believe in it. I remember one time there was this young lady behind me, the one that swept up hair, you know, that girl, and she was standing behind me going like this. I wanted so much to tell her, I can see you in the mirror. Okay? I didn't. I let her off the hook, but that's just... Now, maybe that hasn't happened to you, but you know that somebody in your life is going, you know that's true. And if they're not doing that to you, you're afraid they will. So what's that do to you? Makes you pull back. Makes you hesitant to let people know. Because if you let people know what you believe about Jesus, you might not get that promotion. It's really that simple. Your next door neighbor may not like you anymore. And more and more and more, that is what we face in these United States of America. Some of you are as old as me and older, and you can remember when that wasn't the case, right? You can remember when it was respectable to be a Christian. It's not respectable anymore. Have you noticed it? And the more that becomes a reality for you, the more you will withdraw and pull back and not engage the people around you and not engage the mission of the church in order to remain safe and to have the respect of people around you. I don't know what it's like in your neighborhood, but in my neighborhood, you can tell the Christians from the non-Christians by the fact that the Christians will smile and wave while they're hitting the garage door button trying to get in just as fast as they can. Because the goal when you drive into our neighborhood is to get in the garage and close that garage so you don't have to talk to anybody. The unbelievers, they'll frown and look down while they're doing it. I guess that's the difference. But the Christians want that to happen too. And why? Because we are ashamed of the gospel. We're hesitant about it. It's just not the kind of thing that we want to be identified with anymore. We'd rather be identified with a political party than we would with Jesus in the public eye. We'd rather be identified with our ethnicity than we would with Jesus. We'd rather be identified by our sexual orientation and things like that than we would with Jesus. Too much truth for Saturday morning? That's what missions conferences are about. Trying to say, come on back now. Come on back. Come on back to what's important. I'm not ashamed of the gospel. Well, how was Paul not ashamed of the gospel? He tells us right here. I mean, so confident about it that he was willing to go to Rome and risk his life. He says right there in verse 16, you know it, for I am not ashamed of the gospel because it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone who believes. He says, I'm not ashamed of this story about Jesus. I'm not ashamed of my Jesus because I know something that the world around me doesn't know about it. It's something that every believer ought to know. We forget it real easily, but he's saying, I know something about this that the world doesn't understand. And what is it? The message about Jesus has power in it. Now, you know as well as I do, words are very powerful. When you speak with your wife, if you insult her, it has power over her, doesn't it? If you praise her, it has power over her, doesn't it? And when she does the same to you, you can feel the power coming on you, can't you? Okay, so we all know that words have power. But Paul does not say here that the good news of Jesus is the power of language or the power of words. No, he says, I'm not ashamed of the gospel because it is the power of God. This is the power that created everything. This is the power that sustains everything. This is the power that raised Jesus from the dead. This is the power that will one day make all things new. The message of Jesus has packed inside of it that kind of power. And for that reason, Paul says, how could I be ashamed of it? How could I possibly be ashamed? Because this message has power in it. I grew up in Roanoke, Virginia. I'm a hillbilly from Southwest Virginia. And before I became a believer at 17, I grew my hair long and that kind of stuff. Became sort of a hippie Christian. But before that, I was a pretty typical high schooler. And in our high school, we had a lot of different traditions. But one of them was to stand at the edge of our parking lot, or the gate was, to see what kinds of cars people would drive into our high school parking lot. And if they drove a nice car, then that's somebody you wanted to know. That's somebody you respected. Maybe you want to date that person, that kind of thing. If they drove a crummy car, then they were worthless human beings. Sounds like driving up and down the street in Peachtree City, doesn't it? Yeah? Okay. Well, that's the way we were, too. And I can remember one time we would stand, it would be kind of this gauntlet. We'd stand at the gate and just sort of watch as people drove in. And I remember one time, it was about halfway through the school year, there was a car that was coming toward our high school, but we knew it would not dare turn into our parking lot because it was old. Do you remember that cars, when their windshields would become old, they used to, back in ancient history, that they would cloud up? Do you remember that? Have you been around cars enough to know that old cars, the windshields would do that? Thank you. We have to explain these things to the young folks with their plastic windshields, right? Well, that's what was true for this car. The windshield was clouded up. The headlight was cockeyed like that. The bumper was bent, and the fender had rust spots all over it, okay? And as it went down the road toward our high school, it was shaking like this. No shocks or anything, okay? So we knew that, you know, didn't pay much attention until he slowed down in front of the entrance to our parking lot and actually pulled in. And as he pulled in and went past this line of about 10 guys, instead of hiding down like this, ashamed of his car, he had his hand up in the window, and the other hand he waved at us and said, "Hey, y'all, how you doing?" He was new to our school. He didn't know he was a worthless human being. Well, we were going to let him know. So Friday night, we did, right out of American Graffiti movie, there's this place in Roanoke, Virginia called Williamson Road. If any of you are familiar with Roanoke, you know where that is. It's a six-lane road with all these different traffic lights. And Friday night, what would you do? You go out cruising, go up and down in your parents' car usually, up and down, just trying to find somebody. And if you stopped at the traffic light, you would always do the same thing, like that. And you'd wait to see if the guy next to you did the same thing. And if he did, then you knew you had a race to the next light. And you don't look at the person next to you because it might be your mother, but, you know, and you wait to see, okay? Well, a lot of us went looking for Scott and his hick wreck that Friday night because we were going to let him know how worthless he was. And several of us found him, and they raced him, and he beat every single one of them hands down. And later that night, drove into Shoney's, and he didn't say a word to anybody, just pulled right up next to all of us, got out of his car, and opened the hood of his car. Didn't say a word. And he just sort of stood there. And so we all gathered around, and we found out why Scott was not ashamed of his car. He was a master mechanic, and he didn't care what his car looked like on the outside, but he had rebuilt that engine from the ground up with all the four-barrel Magnum, this, that, and the other that you put on cars. And he had done it. He had turned that thing into a racing machine. And we stood back and said, well, no wonder he's not ashamed of this, because he knew something we didn't know. And what was it? His car had power under the hood. How could you be ashamed of a car like that? How can you be ashamed of the story about Jesus when it has the power of God in it? How can you lack confidence when it's the most important and powerful story you could possibly let somebody know that you believe? I can tell you how. It's pretty easy, actually. All you have to do is to forget what Jesus has done for you and to be withdrawn from the world enough that you never see him do it to somebody else. You know, if you've been a believer for a number of years, it may have been a while since you have actually seen somebody transformed by the gospel. I mean, you still believe it. You're still there. You're still on track. But maybe you haven't seen it at work in somebody else's life fresh. But see, the power of the gospel is not a power that makes nice people nicer or puts them in the right club or brings them into the kind of lifestyle they ought to have. Nothing so trivial as that. Rather, it's the power of God unto salvation. Salvation is a simple message that Jesus saves people from their sins. That's the good news. It's a simple message, but it has so much power in it that it can reach a teenager who is absolutely bent on self-destruction and turn them into a servant of God. It can reach somebody who's on their deathbed and give them everlasting life. It's the power of God that can transform a marriage into a God-honoring marriage rather than a marriage of destruction. It's the power of God into salvation for the entire world, everyone who believes. That's how much power it's got. And so if you have forgotten what kind of power the good news has, it's time for you to make yourself get in a situation where you can see its power at work again. Now, I know this church has outreach and you have people that come to Christ in this church, but rather than you being the old guy that sort of sits back here in the corner, you got that new young believer over there, I'll just leave that to the preacher. You need to get to know that new young believer, because you need to begin to hear again what Jesus does to people's lives. You need to see God's power at work in somebody's life, in a family, in a neighbor, in a friend. And when you do, when you begin to see it afresh, and you're not just hanging around with all your old boring Christian friends all the time, but rather you're with fresh new blood in the Christian faith, then you will become aware of the gospel power and you will not be ashamed anymore. For I am not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek, or the barbarian. That's you and me, the barbarians. This last little bit, to the Jew first and also to the Greek or the barbarian or the pagan, that's another facet of this story about Jesus that we always have to get into our minds and into our hearts if we're going to believe and not be ashamed of it. And it is not just that the gospel has power, but the gospel has a long arm also. Do you remember Mike Tyson? He's a has-been now. They keep making HBO specials about him, things like that. And he appears every once in a while, but he was the world champion for a while, but a real has-been now. Mike Tyson was a very powerful boxer. He had big, powerful arms. I saw him one time hit a man and lift him off the canvas. I mean, just lift him off the canvas with one punch. But Mike Tyson had a big liability for a boxer. Does anybody know what his liability was? Yeah, he was short and he had short arms. So his opponents would be punching him while he was swinging in the air, which meant he always had to get in very close, very tight. I'm sure sometimes so tight that he was tempted to bite his opponent's ear, things like that. And he did that, you know. If you don't know, he did that, okay? It's like big controversy. Mike Tyson bites his ear. Whose ear did he bite? Do you remember? That's right, Holyfield, that's right. Okay, so there you go. Okay, there you go. Pardon me? Oh, he's this L.A.? Cool. Well, ask about it. Go check his ear out or something. If you're a boxer and you have a powerful arm, that's great. But if you have short arms, it's not so good. Same would be true of Jesus and the message about him. Okay, so it's got this great power of God into salvation in it. It can change a person's life. It can put them on a track for eternal salvation. Yeah, that's great. I love it. I like that power. Okay, I'm into it. But if it can't reach people, what good is it? If it can only reach people who are likely to believe anyway, then what's the big deal? Which is what the world will tell you. See, the Apostle Paul says to the Jew first, well, you have to remember that these people were well prepared for the message of Jesus. They knew the Bible. They went to synagogue. They knew when to stand up and when to sit down in church. They knew the difference between a cuss word and a polite word. Their kids were well behaved. They'd be the kinds of kids you'd want in your youth group. They could go on your mission trip and you wouldn't even know they weren't even believers. You just wouldn't even know it. They're so nice. Well prepared for the good news of Jesus. And that's great. And the gospel is for them. That would be like a lot of people who used to live in Peachtree City. Did you hear what I said? Used to live in Peachtree City. Because it used to be that if you were here, it was just sort of assumed that you were at least Christian friendly. That's the way it used to be in all of Atlanta at one point, not very long ago. It's the way it used to be in this whole country, not so very long ago. Yeah, they may not be on fire. They may be nominal, but they're not really opposed to us, except those weirdos in the universities, you know, philosophers and people like that nobody cares about. But the gospel is for people like that. A lot of you were raised in Christian homes, and the good news of Jesus is for you that you need the power also. So that's a good thing, to the Jew first. But did you notice that Paul doesn't say just to the Jews, just to the ones that are well prepared? He says it's also for the Gentile. Now, you have to remember, in those days, Gentiles were real pagans, not soft-touch pagans like we are. Yes, they liked their sausage, but it went further than that. They liked their pork, but it went much further than that. I mean, we're talking about people now that did not know anything about the Bible. Are you with me on this? Nothing. We're talking now about people who were so vile that they did not know the difference between a moral and immoral lifestyle. We're talking about people who, in a conversation, did not know that certain words were polite to be used and certain words were impolite and they were not to be used. They knew the difference. They didn't know the difference between proper English and vulgarities. So they just mixed them all up. Their kids were wild, and they would not be the kind of kids you'd want in your youth group, that's for sure. Because they'd be messing up your little angels. They'd never been to church, so they didn't know when to stand up and sit down. And if you said to them, pull out your hymnals and turn to page 44, they would not know what the word hymnal even meant. And if you told them to turn to John chapter 3, they don't have a clue where that is. Are you with me? That's the kind of people we're talking about in Paul's day. And he says the good news of Jesus can reach them too. Thus it is, in Peachtree City, United States of America, today. Did you know what most Americans, there have been surveys on this, sort of on-the-street surveys that report, that what most people think in America today, when they hear the word gospel, do you know what they think of? A style of music. That's it. That's it. I know we believe that most people know why Jesus died. They do not. I know that we believe that most people understand why Jesus resurrected from the dead. The ones around you, in this neighborhood, they do not. I know that most of us believe that people understand Jesus is coming back one day to change the universe. But most people don't know that at all. And I'm talking about the ones that live around you. And you might say to yourself, you know, if that man is that much of an alcoholic, if that man is doing dope that much, if his kids are that wild, if he's living that immorally, well, I really don't want anything to do with him because I know he'll never believe. And that's exactly what the Apostle Paul is telling us is so wrong about the good news of Jesus. It's got an arm not just for the Jew. It's got a long arm that can reach the Gentile also. And I can tell you this, if the good news of Jesus can reach me and can hold on to me all these years, there is nobody who is beyond its grasp. Nobody. So when you hear about the short-term mission trips this church has to go off to this weird place and that place, and we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and you go, why? I mean, they're never going to believe. Or when you think about your next-door neighbor or you think about your own children, and you say to yourself, they're too far away now. They're gone. When you think about your employees or your employer and you go, man, just too pagan. Remember what the Apostle Paul says, that the good news is not just for those that are well prepared. It's for those who are not well prepared. And you've got to let them know it. You've got to let them know about it or they will never be reached. And that's what the mission is all about. So the Apostle Paul could say, I'm ready to go to Mecca. I don't have any hesitation about it. I'm eager to go. I'm eager to talk to anybody about Jesus because I'm not ashamed of it. It has the power of God into salvation, and it is for the Jew and the barbarian as well. Now look, somebody's got to lead this cause. Somebody's got to lead this cause right here in Peachtree City. And you are the ones to do it. No more embarrassment, no more shame. You remember what Mrs. Camper said to me that day? Richie, if you don't get some confidence, you're going to mess up this whole program. If you don't get some confidence, you're going to mess up the whole program too. It's time to get back to what is very essential to what it means to be a follower of Jesus. I'm ready to let other people know what I believe. Okay, I'm done. What do you want to do? What do you want to talk about? Come on now. So what do you think about that, Doug? Well, yeah, I can tell you one that's just that relates to the ministry that I do. That's so very wonderful. Just a little tidbit that connects to what you're saying. Does anybody know what the most populated Muslim country is in the world? Anybody name that country? Indonesia. And you know there are moderate Muslims there, but there are also radicals as well, and they're having trouble now because they're having trouble, as you would expect. But it is in that environment where Third Mill has been adopted by the Christians there. And this is so very weird. Here you go. You ready with this? In Indonesia, or the South Pacific, larger than that actually, but the heart of it's in Indonesia. Third Mill is now broadcast on television 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on a satellite network channel. Now, what would ever lead a Christian man who owns these kind of, he's kind of like Fox News in Indonesia, okay? What would lead him to want to do that? Why would you ever want to broadcast education for church leaders 24 hours a day in English, Mandarin, and Indonesian, and soon Filipino? Why would you ever want to do that in the largest Muslim nation in the world? That's stupid, isn't it? That's just foolish. Because he's not ashamed of it. You see what I'm saying? Because he has seen with his own eyes what the good news of Jesus does to people. And he knows that those pastors out there in those little villages who have practically nothing and who have absolutely no way to learn the Bible other than watch TBN. That's that Christian television stuff that you know about. He knows that, and you know, have you ever watched Christian TV? If you haven't, you need to watch some this afternoon. And he knows how that's not real power. He knows that the power is in the truth of this. So why would a person devote a channel of many that he has 24/7 to nothing but seminary education for the world for free in those languages? The answer is because he is not ashamed of this. Because he believes that it's going to transform Indonesia. Why would his wife have as her personal goal in life 1,000 Christian schools in Indonesia, the highest Muslim population of any country in the world? Why? Why would she have a goal of establishing 1,000 Christian schools? She's not ashamed of the gospel. But wait a minute, that's just for the Christian kids, right? Right? That's why you have a Christian school in Indonesia. It's for the rich kids. Oh, yeah, they got some really fancy ones. The way he sustains all this stuff is he makes the rich people pay for every other level, okay? Why would he jeopardize the whole thing every time they start a poor school in a poor place? Why would he jeopardize everything he's doing by offending the imam or whatever it may be that may happen that would turn everybody against him? Why does he risk everything every time he does that? He's not ashamed of the gospel. Why do you get in a plane with him and land on some obscure, New Guinea, Papua New Guinea? Why do you land there and then get in another plane and then have to walk for miles into the jungle to a little village where he has established one of these schools and now has a satellite dish there so that the church leaders in that region can receive Third Mill? Why would you do that? That's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard of. I mean, they're practically tree dwellers. Why would you do such a thing as that? I'm not ashamed of the gospel. It's the power of God unto salvation, not just to those that are well prepared, but for the Gentile also. That's why. That's one of 150 kinds of things like that I could tell you that really does illustrate how people who have seen the power of the gospel in their own personal lives, and his testimony is a very powerful one, but his family as well and his friends as well, but also how you can see it affecting people's lives today, the ones that you would not imagine being affected by it. Now, you understand, don't you? And this is what one of the major themes of this weekend is, for me anyway. It may not be yours, but it's mine. Is that America is not that different from Indonesia. In fact, in some respects, Indonesia, with Islam being the dominant and official religion of the country, is friendlier to Christianity than America is. And that people are better prepared by Islam for Christianity than America is preparing them for it. Did I say that? Because the secularism that has dominated America now, at least since World War II, is actually fertile ground for Islam, and it's actually perpetuating the antagonism toward Christianity is much stronger than even Islam is. At least in Islam, they share certain basic values that we share, that we have, like they're male and female, he created them, a few things like that, that there is right and there is wrong, that there is a God, that there is truth. You understand that when you live in a culture like that, like this particular man owns a lot of movie theaters, just put it that way, and they're putting out Christian materials to go along with the movies. And the question was raised one time, well, what do you do about censoring movies? How can you be a Christian and own movie theaters? Because of all the bad stuff that's on the movies, right? I mean, you can imagine that, right? If you were running movie theaters, if you had a conglomerate of movie theaters, you'd have some struggles, wouldn't you? Should I show this movie or not, right? He says, it's not a problem. Why isn't it a problem? Because the movies are already censored. By whom? By the Muslims. He says, it's not a problem for me. Isn't that interesting? So you go, oh, poor Indonesians. They've got Muslims all around them. But the reality is, you and I are the ones that are in the pagan, utterly pagan land. You and I are in the land where the dominant civic religion is Eros. You and I are the ones whose children are being taken away from us. You and I are the ones who are in an antagonistic environment. Isn't that exciting? Hoo-wah! It's time to get busy. Yes, sir. Right. You know, once you identify a missionary who's worthy of your support, you really ought to support them. They ought not have to go around spending half of their year begging for money to be able to feed their kids. Now, be careful to support the right ones. Don't misunderstand me, please, okay? A lot of them are well-meaning and just aren't gifted to do what they think they're called to do. But if you spot the one that is, they really ought not have to worry about, what are we going to be eating? Can I live in a safe enough neighborhood where my wife feels okay? Right. Right. It's a wonderful thing to be able to say that. You're right. You're absolutely right. Yes, sir. You're one of the worthy ones, by the way. Yeah. Well, thanks for asking that. I knew what needed to be done in the sense of, leaders of the church need to be taught the Bible everywhere. Everybody said it can't be done. That was the wrong thing to say to me. I don't know what to say, okay? I got this human thing going on here, okay? Somebody says you can't do it. I'm going to say, well, let's just see if we can, okay? But I didn't do it myself, that's for sure. If any of you know me, you know what I am. I'm just a geek. That's all I am. I'm just a geek. I mean, what kind of person spends 2 years in the basement of the Harvard Semitic Museum learning how to read Babylonian? What kind of person does that? A geek. That's me. Okay? So God chose to put this calling on somebody that couldn't take credit for any good that came from it. And then in addition to that, you know, friends like your church, people here in your church, and churches around the world now, I'm happy to say, are to one degree or another, you know, they caught the vision too, and it's happening. But yeah, it is incredible what God has done. To think, you know, people would say, well, why don't you just do it, write some books, Richard, be reasonable about this. Well, if we had written some books, would it be on television broadcast to every pastor in Indonesia today? No. Would it be broadcast in Muhammad's living room in Mecca twice a week? No. Which we are. Okay? Would it be something that other denominations were demanding if I just written some books? How many books you got in that room in there, Tim? Okay, the answer is no. Okay? So all the effort and time and money that it took to sort of create this basic core curriculum, that's what's so wonderful about this is that God, without us even realizing what we were doing, was preparing the way to be able to literally to saturate the world. That's the goal. So thank you. Yes, sir. Wow. Well, that's if I were in Peachtree City, kind of, is that where you live here? You normal Peachtree City person? I would think for this kind of environment that a lot of what you do that's more aggressive, in addition to just being willing that when the question's asked, I know what to say. Okay, I know how to say Jesus is the only way of salvation. What do you think about that? Okay, that kind of thing. But in addition to that, you know, this church is in a very critical spot here that it can do things that are very public and very attention-getting. And I think that's the kind of leverage, that's the aggressiveness I would want to see, not just in this church, I really don't know what you do, but in our churches, that we're no longer sort of, well, doing like what an Anglican friend of mine once said to me. I asked him, I said, do you have a website for your church? He said, yeah. I said, well, do you, because they're in a Muslim neighborhood and in London. And he said, what kind of things do you want to do? I said, well, do you have testimonies from people that are new Christians on your website? He said, no, we don't do that. Why? He said, because our windows are too expensive. I said, what? Yeah, our windows are too expensive. If we were to do that, the Muslims in the neighborhood would be throwing rocks through our windows. So we have to keep a low profile because our windows are too expensive. Do you hear this? Old stained glass windows. Didn't want them knocked out. So you got to keep a low profile for that reason. And, well, that's what I'd say. You know, get rid of them. Knock them, take some rocks and throw them yourself. But that's the problem, is that we tend to be low profile for fear of offending, and that would be the kind of thing I'd be watching for. Thank you guys so much. We're past time. You're wonderful. Thanks for coming out this Saturday morning. I appreciate you very much.